In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Monday, August 15th, 2016 AD. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. Two Sudanese Christian pastors may face the death sentence over trumped-up espionage charges with little evidence, reports Reuters. According to Christian Solidarity Worldwide, a group which advocates for the persecuted, Reverend Abdurim and Reverend Shamal were charged with helping raise money for the medical care of a student who had been badly burned by Sudanese officials during a demonstration. Jesus has a message for these brave Christian leaders. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Matthew 5:12. With the G20 summit of leaders of 19 nations and the European Union, including President Barack Obama, to be held in China's coastal Zhejiang province in early September, China Aid reports that communist authorities have increased pressure on churches in the area. They have closed down a prominent 2,000-member house church affiliated with Watchman Nee's Little Flock for organizing Christian activities without permission. A Milwaukee, Wisconsin police officer shot and killed a 23-year-old man who was armed with a handgun, sparking riots Saturday night. Crowds of protesters set fire to a police car and torched a gas station. Here's one eyewitness account from a smartphone video posted on YouTube.
Police killed a young man on 44. We had to take this situation. We understand because we was upset. They set a DTEC car on fire over there. It's still burning. I don't know if you can see it. Then the police came and started shooting at us. Then they were shooting back at the police. They were throwing rocks at them. So then they went down and busted this gas station down now. Gas station on fire. Police coming in. Hopefully stop the gas station fire. They're throwing bricks at the police, rocks at the police. They raided the gas stations, took everything in it, busted the gas station down. Gas station on fire, all the cars on the gas station on fire.
The New York Observer is claiming that Apple, Twitter, Google, and Instagram are colluding to defeat Donald Trump. For example, Google is manipulating searches to bury negative stories about Clinton. In July, searches for Trump's book, Crippled America, returned images of Adolf Hitler's manifesto Mein Kampf, and Twitter has banned Trump supporters such as Breitbart's Milo Yiannopoulos and most recently, rapper Azealia Banks. Christian author Eric Metaxas questions Hillary Clinton's recent claim in her op-ed column in the Mormon-owned Deseret News that she has worked for years to defend religious liberty. Metaxas told Fox News that if ever there was an enemy to religious liberty, the former Secretary of State would be it. 13 states, led by Texas, will ask a federal judge to halt the Obama administration's order to allow transgender students in U.S. public schools to use the restrooms of their choice, reports FoxNews.com. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said at the time, "We will not yield to blackmail from the President of the United States." The other states objecting to transgendered bathrooms are Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Utah, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. Despite the threat of a lawsuit, the Berkeley County, South Carolina School Board is moving to reinstate the Lord's Prayer before its meetings, reports WFMB News. Matthew 10:32 says, "Whoever acknowledges me before others, I will also acknowledge before my Father in heaven." At least 2 are dead and more than 1,000 rescued from Gulf Coast flooding deemed historic, the National Weather Service reports. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards declared a state of emergency as Baton Rouge reported getting drenched with 11 inches of rain in just 24 hours. Katie Ledecky delivered another winning performance at the Rio Olympic Games Friday night, breaking her own world record in the 800-meter freestyle, reports NBC Sports. And Michael Phelps settled for silver along with two longtime rivals, Chad Lacloze of South Africa and Laszlo Csev of Hungary. They all three came in second place at 51.14 seconds, a half body length behind Singaporean Joseph Schooling. On Saturday, in the 4x100-meter medley relay, Phelps ended his career with another record-setting gold medal, swimming the butterfly leg of the medley, his 23rd at the Olympics and his 28th medal overall. In other Olympic news, Alma Zayana, an Ethiopian athlete, smashed the 23-year-old world record for running 10,000 meters by 14 seconds, reports Reuters. When the gold medalist was asked at a press conference whether she used performance-enhancing drugs, she replied through an interpreter, "My doping is my training. My doping is Jesus. I am crystal clear." And that's the world news on this Monday, August 15th, in the year of our Lord, 2016. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ.
Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Homeschool father of five, raising our kids out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Bill Jack in studio with me from Worldview Academy. And today we're going to get back to Donald Trump. He just met with some 700 evangelicals down in Florida, and he made a comment. I think the core of his message was important, and it's important to us because it's indicative of the heart of a nation. We don't just pick on Donald Trump, but we look at Donald Trump as a public figure who represents much of America, probably close to 40-45% of America, most of which are evangelicals or conservatives. So because of that, we want to listen to what he has to say and comment on it. Here was pretty much the core of his speech to the evangelicals in Florida just this last week. He said this: "Once I get in, that it, into the presidency, I will do my thing that I do very well. And I figure it is probably maybe the only way I'm going to get to heaven, so I better do a good job," end quote. All right, stop. Stop the cameras. Everybody stop. Have you ever heard that before, Bill?
Oh, yes. I hear it all the time.
Yeah, you out get on out the streets. Yeah, yeah, out on the streets, you ask the simple question, Why should God let you into heaven?
Or you just ask the question, what happens when you die? You know, yeah. There's three choices. There's heaven or hell, there's extinction, or there's reincarnation. And if they choose heaven or hell, then you got to ask them, well, how do you get there? And they say, well, because I'm a good person.
I'm a pretty good person.
Yeah.
And that would be 7-8 times out of 10, right?
Yeah.
That's America.
Yeah.
That's America. America is all about
pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
Salvation by works.
Yep. Yep. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Guess
what does
I'm
that
gonna
mean
be,
anyway?
Guess I'm going to be good enough for heaven.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like Romans 3 to me.
I don't think it is.
Or Romans 4.
It's the church of what's happening now. That's the doctrine of what's happening now.
And that's not going to be good enough for God. Donald Trump could be the best president in the world, and God would not let him into heaven on that basis.
Right.
All right. So, my friends, that's the comment that Donald Trump made to these evangelicals. He'd do better if he asked God for forgiveness.
And he's never said that he's done that.
Not yet.
No.
Here's an interesting article from Atlantic Magazine. It's a liberal magazine, and I think it's important to this discussion. Now, again, these are liberals, and from time to time you need to listen to the liberals and answer them. They deserve an answer. Okay? And here they're posing a question to us, and I think they deserve an answer. The article is entitled, "Trump Loving Christians Owe Bill Clinton an Apology." More than two decades after Clinton's first inauguration, many evangelical leaders of that era have endorsed the draft-dodging, foul-mouthed, honesty-challenged womanizer named Donald Trump for president. Only a handful refused to follow suit, including Albert Mohler, the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. They quote Mohler, who says, "If I were to support, much less endorse, Donald Trump for president, I would actually have to go back and apologize to former President Bill Clinton." They say at least Mueller is consistent, which is more than can be said for some of his peers in leadership. So we'll stop right there for just a moment. I'd like to read a little bit more, but he's pressing for consistency, and that's important. Hey,
do we have a problem with what Bill Clinton did back in the 1990s?
Absolutely. And Jonathan Merritt, the author of this, starts off by saying conservative evangelicals were unwilling to offer forgiveness to a Democrat who asked for it, because that's what Bill Clinton did. But they have freely offered it to a Republican who doesn't want it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sad inconsistency, and I think we need to present an answer to this. Let me move on. That televangelist Pat Robertson once called Clinton a debauched, debased, and defamed politician who turned the Oval Office into a playpen for the sexual freedom of the poster child of the 1960s. It's difficult to understand how Robertson could tell Trump recently, "You inspire us all." The Republican candidate has been married three times. It's widely believed that he was unfaithful during each relationship. When he was deposed in the divorce proceedings with his first wife, Ivana, he invoked the Fifth Commandment 97 times to avoid answering questions regarding other women.
Wait, you said the Fifth Commandment. You meant the Fifth Amendment.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Fifth Amendment. He married his second wife, Marla Maples, 2 months after she gave birth to their daughter. Until recently, Trump embraced his reputation as a Manhattan womanizer. In case you're wondering, evangelicals typically aren't big fans of a divorce, adultery, or out-of-wedlock pregnancy. In September 1998, James Dobson of Focus on the Family sent a letter to 2.4 million conservative Christians claiming Clinton could be impeached because his behavior was setting a bad example for our children about respecting women. Dobson's apparent concern for women back then feels like a partisan political move now that he's given Trump an enthusiastic endorsement. While Clinton at least hid his indiscretions, Trump has paraded his affairs down Broadway for decades. In his book, The Art of the Deal, Trump actually bragged about betting multiple married women. He's slept with so many women that he called his ability to avoid STDs my personal Vietnam. He's objectified or insulted the women he hasn't married, divorced, or slept with, labeling those he finds unattractive with terms like fat pig, dog, or slob. In numerous interviews with Howard Stern, he talked in graphic detail about his sexual exploits and discussed which female celebrities are worth a quote-unquote fornication deal. How exactly do evangelicals reconcile this behavior with claims that they value respect for women? Trump's character clashes with evangelical ethics in ways that would have killed Clinton's political career two decades ago. Conservative Christians typically oppose pornography, but in 1990, Trump appeared on the cover of Playboy magazine. 2006, it would have been just, what, 8 years ago, he rewarded an apprentice team with a trip to the Playboy mansion. Conservative Christians also are typically opposed to gambling, but Trump has made millions as a largely failed casino owner. Until 2013, he opened the nation's first casino strip club, Atlanta City's Trump Taj Mahal. Although both Bill Clinton and Trump have morally checkered past, only one of them has apologized for his failings. In September of 1998, the solemn Bill Clinton asked the country, his family, and God to forgive him, saying, "I have sinned." Evangelical leaders largely dismissed his apology and continued their calls for impeachment. By contrast, Trump says he has never asked God for forgiveness. Conservative Christians were unwilling to extend mercy to a Democrat who asked for it, but have offered it freely to a Republican who doesn't want it. All of this signals something bigger, an end to meaningful evangelical power and influence. And to that extent, I think he's right.
Evangelicalism
is, as far as its influence in politics, is over, my friends. It's done. The Christian Coalition, the Moral Majority, and whatever's going on right now, RIP, rest in peace, it's over. Evangelicalism and its influence in American politics is done. The old order Christian conservatism is over. It's done for a lot of reasons, but most importantly, evangelicalism has abandoned principle and has given way to pure pragmatism. Why? Because evangelicalism hates the law of God in general and will not stand on the recorded law of God in the Old and New Testament. Because of that, it has no ethical basis whatsoever. Be back in just a moment with more on the Generations broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, Bill Jack, also in studio.
Our freedoms are disappearing in the Western world. Big government tyranny is on the rise just about everywhere. Some Christians are going to jail in America for their faith, while others are fined $135,000 for refusing to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. Has freedom become a lost cause? Have we forgotten why brave men gave their lives for freedom in bygone eras? Discover the remarkable struggle for Western liberties over the past 2,000 years in Kevin Swanson's latest book, Freedom. In this seminal work on freedom from a Christian perspective, Kevin Swanson first defines the term and then traces the struggle for freedom through biblical times and church history. You will read the battle for the Magna Carta, the Scottish War for Independence, the Dutch War for Independence, and America's War for Independence, and the Bill of Rights. Order Freedom online today or download the free sample at generations.org to get a vision of freedom for Christians in the 21st century. Therefore, if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed.
And we are back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson, Bill Jack also in studio today as we discuss this article from Atlantic Magazine concerning character, whether character is essential or whether empty, vain promises are of more interest, or photo ops with the latest popular political candidate of the day is the priority and the value for the evangelical leaders of our day. That's the question here. Is character really matter? And it's interesting, Bill, a person's character is known by his non-interest in the character of the people that he chooses for leadership. Does that make sense?
Yes, because he surrounds himself with those who are like-minded.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing is that on both sides of the political aisle, we can judge their character by those who with whom they've surrounded themselves.
And there's a lack of character in this candidate. And we've pointed this out before. And it appears that character is a non-issue. The question for most of these people is, did he promise something that we wanted to hear? Did he say something we wanted to hear? Now, we've said this again and again with politicians. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me 347 million times. I'm a complete idiot. At some point, we need to focus on character and the things that symbolize and signify character. And that, my friends, is the voting record. That is the record of that person who funded certain campaigns. And if a guy has funded 72% of his campaign donations in the last election to Democrats, this is an indication that the man's commitment is not towards principle. This is an indication of the man's unprincipled position when it comes to the most important, significant values of the day. If 72% of his monies are going to candidates who are pro-abortion and stand for the killing of human babies, then friends, that's an indication this man lacks character, has a fundamental lack of character, and has never proven character such that he might lead a nation. Friends, don't listen to the rhetoric. Watch the record. Watch the campaign donations. This is the kind of thing we've pointed out many times in this program. And those who believe in character, stand on character, want to see character in their leadership, those who are taking Exodus 18:21 to the bank or to the voting booth and saying, absolutely, the man must fear God, love the truth, hate covetousness. That's essential for my vote, is the person that will look to the broad rhetoric of the man over a period of the entire campaign. They'll watch the things he said and the things he's done over the last, well, at least the last 4 years, and hopefully the last 20 years of his life as he has lived in the public eye. This matters to those who have an eye for character, but the modern evangelical political movement has jettisoned substance. They have proven themselves they don't care about character. They don't care about substance. They don't care about the law of God. They don't care about what God says as the standard for political leaders. They have turned to an unprincipled, pragmatic, externalistic, hypocritical approach to things. At heart, they just don't want to obey God. And I think this is what we see in King Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 15. Do you remember that Saul was supposed to obey God? He was supposed to go with principle, and he was supposed to wipe out the Amalekites, including King Agag, who happened to be the king of the enemy of God's people in 1 Samuel chapter 15. Now, I apply this to a to more of a spiritual approach in the New Testament, but we certainly see the lack of character and the pragmatism in King Saul when we read Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and they were unwilling to utterly destroy them, but everything despised and worthless that they utterly destroyed. Now, this, I think, is a good representation of the typical mentality of the insipid, hypocritical evangelical of the day. What they say is, I'll maintain my porn. I'll maintain my divorces, my little affairs on the side, my public school education without the fear of God. I just don't want my son to become a homosexual or incestuous or a polygamist. I just want to deal with the despised and the worthless things. But at principle, I really have no commitment to God or to his word. This, my friends, is a picture, a beautiful picture of the modern insipid, hypocritical evangelical of the day. He's not rooted in principle. He goes after a little bit of the despised and the worthless. Doesn't want his son to be a homosexual, but man, he's still going to hang on to his pornography. He's going to support divorce. He's going to support a little affair here and there for his political candidates on the side. He's going to allow for a lack of the fear of God in the candidate he elects, and he's certainly not going to stand for the fear of God as the beginning of knowledge in American public school classrooms. Friends, that's the picture of the modern evangelical, and that's why they're losing, and that's why they're irrelevant, and that's why they will be of no consequence whatsoever in this election or future elections for that matter. Well, Bill, I'm going to move on towards the good news. The good news is there is a principled Christian leader in this nation, and that is a judge, in fact, a chief justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And he's in the news again because he stood on principle. And if you stand on principle, you will be slapped down big time.
I mean, they've already removed him once from the Supreme Court of Georgia, right?
Alabama,
I mean. They've already moved him once, and now they're trying to remove him again.
They sure are. And friends, he's standing for righteousness. And yes, granted, occasionally you run into somebody who'll put their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor on the line for the cause of freedom and righteousness. And yes, they will suffer the consequences for it, and they'll gain almost no support from the conservative Republicans or the unprincipled pragmatists of the day. And here's a story that bears out this principle from Heather Clark. She writes, Chief Judge, church elder who voted to strike down Alabama sodomy law, joins the court in Alabama to send Roy Moore to trial. So what they're doing in this article is they're pointing out the tale of two judges. Got Judge A, Judge B. Judge A is a church elder of a nice little Southern Baptist church in Montgomery, Alabama. Judge B is Chief Justice Roy Moore, who is now being sent to trial in September for standing against homosexual marriage and attempting to appeal the issue to the Supreme Court one more time. In other words, he was going for another round. And nobody else wanted to do it because they didn't have the guts, the courage, or the faith to stand up against some of the most wicked laws we have ever seen in the history of this nation. The chief judge of the Alabama Court of the Judiciary, that's the COJ, who also serves as an elder at his local church, has joined in an order refusing to dismiss the ethics charges against Alabama Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore, resulting in a trial. Attorneys for Moore had sought to have his charges dismissed without the matter moving to trial, while the State Judiciary Inquiry Commission asked that he be immediately removed from the bench. On Monday, Justice J. Michael Joyner, the chief judge of the COJ, joined his eight colleagues in denying both requests. As previously reported, Joyner is an elder at the church at Brook Hills in Birmingham and serves as a Bible teacher. He is an active member of the church at Brook Hills, where he teaches a Bible study class. As bio reads, he previously served as deacon and chairman of the Shelby Baptist Association Credentials Committee. In 2014, this same Judge Joyner, who serves on the Alabama Criminal Court of Appeals, likewise joined his colleagues in striking down a state law that criminalized those who engage in deviant sexual intercourse with another person, and consent is no defense to a prosecution. In other words, he was the judge who stood against law that would have prosecuted a sodomy case. And I believe there was rape involved as well. I don't want to go into all of the specifics because it's gross. But he stood against that law and he exonerated the criminal in that particular case. And now he's gone to the extent of pressing Judge Roy Moore to trial simply because Judge Roy Moore stood against homosexual marriage in the state of Alabama. Again, there are some technicalities here, but Roy Moore would have wanted to appeal the state's particular position on homosexual marriage to the Supreme Court of the United States, taking one more round towards the Supreme Court in order to fight back. And this particular Judge Joyner, who's a member of a Southern Baptist church in Birmingham, Alabama, refused to do that. And rather pressed him to trial. And, you know, I think the principle we ought to obey God rather than men applies just as much to the county clerk and to these judges and the Supreme Court justices of the state of Alabama as it does to Peter, John, and James as they are standing for righteousness and preaching righteousness in the public square in AD 33. Personally, I think that that command, we ought to obey God rather than man, that principle applies very much to any Christian who must stand against injustice and unrighteousness in the public sphere. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, go deal with, you know, a trash collection agency or become a plumber, but don't you dare be a judge in the state of Alabama if you're not willing to stand on the principles of God's word.
Don't be a plumber either. Don't be a trash collector either, unless you're willing to stand on the word of God on everything. It doesn't just apply to judges. It applies to everybody. And that's why this is so important, because worldviews affect everything. There is no justice in this world. We might as well get used to that, but that does not recuse us of the responsibility of standing for righteousness no matter what position we have. And those who are plumbers, who are trash collectors, who are Christians, ought to stand with Roy Moore on this issue, and they ought to become verbal about it. They ought to get louder. That's my message to Christians. We need to get louder. Now, what is so amazing about this is that Matt Staver, who is representing Roy Moore, told a crowd of Moore supporters on the steps of the judicial building that the charges are, quote, politically motivated, end quote. He questions why they want to remove Moore from the bench when at the same time the Justice Department in Alabama agreed to only a 6-month suspension for a probate judge, Leon Archer, who had been found guilty of sexting with a litigant.
Yeah.
So there is a double standard.
Sure.
And Christians need to get used to this, and Christians need to step up like Roy Moore and say, okay, enough is enough. You're going to mishandle this. There's not going to be justice, but I am going to get louder and louder and louder because I am a watchman on the wall. I am sounding the alarm. And then the blood will be on the heads of those who do not heed the warning.
Bill, this whole pro-sodomy thing is not going to last very long. 50 years max. This idea that somehow abominations and unrighteousnesses and these horrific tyrannical rules and laws will survive for more than 20, 30, 40, 50 years is ridiculous, my friends. Inevitably, the mills of God grind slowly, but very fine. Keep that in mind. And 50 years from now, Judge Roy Moore will be the hero that stood for righteousness. I realize he's the goat today. Almost nobody stands with him. Almost nobody wants to take the chance of standing against the flow of tyranny and the abominable laws that are being supported by the Supreme Court of the United States. Almost nobody wants to stand for righteousness today. William Wallace, William the Silent, they were virtually one man against everybody at times when tyranny and abominable behavior on the part of the most powerful leaders of the land was fraught through the system. And friends, it's amazing to find that inevitably the good wins out, despite the fact that they are outnumbered 100,000 to 1 again and again, which you find in history. is that those who stood with faith and by courage, and they believed in God, and they refused to back down, and they were willing to go to jail for their principles, these are the ones that win out in the end. Here's what Hebrews 11:32 says. What more shall I say? For the time should fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson, Jephthah, also of David and Samuel, the prophets who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, that they stood for justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, women received their dead, raised to life again. Friends, these are the examples of faith in history, and those who stand for righteousness against the powerful forces of darkness are those who will be lauded and will wind up in the true pantheon of true heroes in the years to come. Judge Roy Moore has stood virtually alone in America against the flood tide of support for sodomy and the worst possible evil that could ever be imagined for any nation. And of course he's going to pay the price for it. Of course he's going to pay for it. As sure as the devil exists, as sure as principalities and powers are going to set themselves against these individuals who are willing by faith to take the stand, he's going to run into troubles. But the Southern Baptist churches are opposing him. Republicans are opposing him. Conservatives are embarrassed to stand with him, because this is the one man willing to put his life, his fortunes, his sacred honor on the line for righteousness. And almost nobody is willing to do that today. Judge Michael Joyner will be remembered for prosecuting Judge Roy Moore, who took the stand for righteousness. That's how he will be known 50 years from now. But Judge Roy Moore will be remembered as the man who stood alone, virtually alone, against the forces of darkness, the forces of wickedness that almost completely captured control over the Western world in the 2000s. Well, my friends, that wraps up this edition of the Generations Radio broadcast. My encouragement to you is read history, read the great stories of history of how single men stood alone against unbelievable odds and eventually won out. Their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor were taken down. William the Silent lost everything, everything against the tyranny of Rome and the Spanish Empire. But he was able to bring that horrific persecution of Christians to an end. He gave up his life, his fortune. His son was kidnapped. He lost three brothers and lost several wives in the conflict. Friends, you need to read the story of the greatest heroes who've ever lived, greatest political heroes who stood in the gap against the most powerful forces of darkness in the political sphere. And that story is told in the book Freedom, a book that I wrote about a year ago, available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. Get a copy of Freedom and read the exciting story to your children. And that story, that book, is available at our website, generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack in studio, inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.